I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about horseradish.
Today's episode was suggested by listener Nicole.
And listener Nicole, I hope we do an okay job here because I think possibly neither of us has much of an opinion about horseradish, but we're going to do our best.
Yeah. No, this is a tricky one because...
Is it snowing?
It kind of looks a little bit like it's snowing. So I wanted to do this because I wanted to learn more about horseradish. And of course, I think probably the majority of the horseradish I've eaten is actually in the form of wasabi.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But yeah, just a heads up, this is one of those episodes where Matthew and I are just like not that... We're just not that into it.
The teacher has become the student, and now both of us are the student, and we have no teacher, and the class is running wild.
The class is totally out of control.
Giving each other wedgies.
Mm-hmm. But not eating any horseradish like they're supposed to.
What kind of school is this? Is this what Montessori is?
This is what Montessori is. Yeah. This is the education. This is the pedagogy that I'm a product of. You wonder how I got this way.
Yeah, it's all based on horseradish and wedgies.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just the way Maria Montessori wanted it.
That's right.
Okay.
So, Matthew, okay, I just want to say my parents always had a jar of horseradish.
I'm sure mine did too.
The refrigerator door. I remember my dad using it occasionally, but like, you know, for things like something he'd be making for himself for lunch on the weekend.
Oh, like it's nobody a thing else a was dad gonna would eat. Put on a sandwich,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
Yeah.
I also remember my parents having some dinner party with some fancy cut of beef. Maybe it was a beef tenderloin or something.
Oh, or maybe a standing rib roast.
Maybe. And making horseradish whipped cream.
I came across horseradish whipped cream while I was researching. I think you're right. That's what it was.
Yeah. And anyway, so, you know, I thought that horseradish was something that only like parents of a certain generation mm-hmm. eat. However, my spouse really likes horseradish. I think it's a horseradish mustard.
Okay.
That they bought and put on their sandwiches. It is bizarre.
All right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Same here. Like, I think probably this is a thing that that my parents ate, and probably particularly my dad. Like, and I was afraid of it. Not cause, like, I knew it was like spicy or it'd make your nose tingle, but I think it was like it seemed like a creamy thing that came out of the fridge, and I was not about that.
I guess I never even thought of it as being creamy. I mean, that's what's so weird about
it. We'll get to that.
Yeah. I think visually as a kid, I tended to confuse it with the little jar of minced garlic that my parents kept in the fridge door.
Oh,
Do you remember that jar
of minced garlic? What a like an 80s, 90s thing.
I know.
And we would get the one from Costco that was huge.
Oh, wow. Would you guys also get the big canister of already peeled garlic cloves?
Not that I remember. I think like pretty much all the garlic that got used, unless there was some, I don't think my mom ever made like, you know, leg of lamb with 40 cloves of garlic. Is that what the recipe is?
Something like that. Chicken with 40 cloves of garlic.
Oh, it's like 7-hour leg of lamb.
There you go.
It's like, the best recipes are the ones with an improbably large number. So I remember that like all of our garlic was in the jar.
Yeah. Yeah, I think ours was too. Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah,
it's totally fine.
Not bad. Okay, so would you like to hear a little bit about what horseradish is?
Yeah, okay, yeah. What is this?
Yeah, because I was confused about like what's in that jar that sits in the fridge door, and we'll get to that. But let's start with what the plant is.
Okay.
So unsurprisingly, horseradish is a plant in the same family as mustard, radishes, and wasabi. That's the Brassicaceae family, which is also famous for Brussels sprouts, cabbage, kale, that sort of
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is probably native to Western Asia and Southeastern Europe and has been used in the cuisines and the traditional medicine of those areas for a really long time.
Okay.
Like you can find 12th century writings from like Ashkenazi Jewish literature referring to horseradish.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
According to Wikipedia, quote, intact horseradish root has little aroma. When cut or grated, enzymes from within the plant cells digest synuglin, a glucosinolate, to produce allyl isothiocyanate, mustard oil.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Yep. Hold on, Matthew. You got to pronounce these again because it's so impressive. I want the listeners to hear it again.
But what if it was a fluke?
Yeah, no, do it again. Okay.
Okay. Enzymes from within the plant cells digest sinigrin, a glucosinolate, to produce allyl isothiocyanate, mustard oil, which irritates the mucous membranes of the sinuses and eyes.
Okay.
Once exposed to air or heat, horseradish loses its pungency, darkens in color, and develops a bitter flavor.
Wow. Okay. This is so interesting. Okay, so it's a root. Did you see a picture of any of them, like on Wikipedia?
Yeah, and they sell the fresh root like at the supermarket sometimes.
Does it look like daikon, or does it look more like ginger? Like, does it have, I guess, a skin that you have to peel
off?
It
has a skin, and it's chunkier than ginger, but not as chunky as daikon, I would say.
Okay. By chunky, you mean thick.
I mean thick with two C's.
That's right. Okay, so yeah, it's grated.
It's grated, and then so the stuff in a jar, when you get prepared horseradish, is what they always call it in a jar. Mm-hmm. It's usually just grated horseradish, usually like finely grated with vinegar and sometimes like a little bit of sugar or preservatives or something like that.
Okay, because it holds its color, its whiteness pretty well.
Yeah.
I guess because of those preservatives.
Yep.
Okay.
And so, if historically speaking, obviously Pliny the Elder got in on the horseradish accent.
Of course,
right?
He did.
Action.
His I'm getting axons, in on that accent.
And his dendrites were both hard at work. So Wikipedia again, quote, horseradish is probably the plant mentioned by Pliny the Elder in his Natural History under the name of Amoracea and recommended by him for its medicinal qualities.
Huh. Okay.
So Native Americans used horseradish as a treatment for the common cold and a scurvy preventative. It is high in vitamin C. And the thing I thought was interesting about this is that horseradish was brought to North America by European colonization. And I think like when we talk about traditional foods and remedies of Native American peoples, like we often think of this as like a thing that stopped at colonization. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, like every civilization, like, you know, Native American civilizations continue to say, okay, we've got some new stuff. Let's fit that into, you know, our existing framework.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was not a static thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Etymology is knocking.
Oh, wait.
Oh, come
there
on
he
in.
Is. Okay.
Okay. So this one was like more simple than I expected, at least the word horseradish. Horse is an archaic English prefix meaning strong or coarse, like horse chestnut.
Oh.
So horseradish is like a strong radish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What is a horse chestnut?
A horse chestnut. We all have a choice to make in life.
Uh-huh.
A horse chestnut. It's like, I think, I want to say the chestnuts that like fall off trees around Seattle are horse chestnuts. They're like non-edible chestnuts.
Well, they're spiky on the outside.
But I think all chestnuts are spiky on the outside.
Okay.
But I don't think you can eat the ones that grow on trees around here. Can you?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think so. So a horse chestnut is like a chestnut that's too strong to eat.
But maybe
a horse can eat them.
I hadn't thought of the word horse chestnut in a long time. But there is, so horses have these, like, I don't even know what they are. They're like natural parts of their legs.
Hooves.
That look like a funny like scab, or it's almost like the texture.
I didn't know about
it's almost
this.
Like the texture of a dog's paw.
Okay.
And they're called chestnuts.
All right. And so those.
And they're on a horse's leg.
Wow. So there's more than one kind of horse chestnut.
Yeah.
What can you think of some other words that have horse as a prefix? How about horseplay?
Oh, yeah.
But I figure that just means like playing roughly as horses do.
Playing coarsely.
Mm-hmm. What about horse feathers?
Nope. What about horse?
Wait. What about horse divorce?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one.
Nailed
that means coarse divorce. Okay. All right.
A horse is a horse, of course. And no one can divorce a horse, of course. Wow.
So horseradish is just a really strong radish.
Yeah, and it's not literally a radish, but it's in the same family. So in Proto-Slavic, the word was something like kren. which survives is the word for horse. Yes.
I'm sorry the way you said that. You really put yourself into it.
It was,
and I think I did really sprayed
enjoy
a little bit of yourself under the microphone too.
I do that a lot.
Go on.
And that survives is the word for horseradish in modern Yiddish, Polish, Czech, Russian, and many other languages from that part of the world.
Kren.
And kren like is usually used to mean like a prepared horseradish. And in some countries, it often has beetroot added. So it's like purplish.
Yes, I've seen this.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So prepared horseradish is grated horseradish vinegar and a little bit of salt and sugar. And that is what we had in like the little jar.
Absolutely.
Or
yeah.
Sometimes like in a squeeze bottle.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Okay. And so what do people do with it? Like they use it as a condiment.
Yeah. So like with meat, with fish on a sandwich, like it's kind of a classic roast beef sandwich thing. Yeah.
Fish?
Yes. It's the classic condiment that goes with gefilte fish.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
A thing like I've never had and I'm scared of.
I've never had it and I'm also scared of
it. Okay, let's do an episode. This could be what Ash is buying to use on their sandwiches. According to Wikipedia, quote, also available in the UK is Tewkesbury mustard, a blend of mustard and grated horseradish originating in medieval times and mentioned by Shakespeare. Falstaff says, quote, his wit's as thick as Tewkesbury mustard in Henry IV, part two.
We recently mentioned Tewkesbury in an episode, but Yes, we did.
Wow.
It came up as a place that was the center of something.
Okay. I mean,
it was like a lot of stuff was made.
We did a mustard episode.
Oh!
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
Who would have thought that was going to pop up again? I thought we had dealt with this Tewkesbury thing once and for all.
Interesting. Well, okay, Tewkesbury mustard. Well, interesting. I guess, is all mustard made in Tewkesbury?
But
is it all horseradish mustard?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Okay,
either.
we have listeners in that part of the world, by which I mean Tewkesbury. And I expect they will send us an email, contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com. And let us know, is all Tewkesbury mustard horseradish mustard?
Have you seen Enola Holmes?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So the Marquis of Tewkesbury is who is her like romantic counterpart.
So he's like a mustard man.
He's a mustard man. Okay. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So on the Bloody Mary episode, we would have used horseradish, right?
Yeah,
like, did you buy it then?
I bought it then.
Where is it?
It sat in the fridge for a while and then I threw it out.
Okay.
But I remember I made a homemade Bloody Mary and I put in too much horseradish and it was bad.
Really?
Do you remember this?
No, I don't remember this.
Okay. I feel like I didn't remember that
we did a Bloody Mary episode.
Okay.
Okay. So
you don't remember that we did a Bloody Mary episode, but you remember that we talked about Tewkesbury?
Yes. Well, because I think I researched that one.
Okay. That makes sense.
So horseradish is commonly mixed with mayo, right? I wonder if that's what Ash has that I'm thinking
It could be.
Of.
Yeah. And so that makes like creamy horseradish.
Okay.
And I suspect that's what the horsey sauce at Arby's is. I didn't look this up because I just remembered, like just before we sat down to record this episode, we had a minor emergency when I said I forgot to say anything about horsey sauce on the agenda and like all the horsey sauce people are going to write in.
Yeah. And I was like, quick, Matthew, grab a pen, write it down. You can't forget.
That is actually what you said.
Yeah.
I assume horsey sauce, like we already know horse as a prefix means coarse. So it's like, it's like regular e-sauce, but coarser.
Do you think that I could say, like, so to go back to the...
You can say anything you want.
To go back to the Mr. Ed theme song, a horse is a horse of horse of horse?
What?
Wait. A horse is a horse of horse of course.
Because
so a horse is a horse of horse of horse.
Because horse means course.
That's right.
Right.
Could I also say a course is a course of horse of course?
You could say that, yes. And people say, like, a popular saying is horses for courses, but you could just say horses for horses, right? Or courses for course.
That's who I'm voting for in this election cycle. Horses for horses.
Oh, this is like some sort of species centric horse party. Okay, yeah. All right.
I mean, I'm down with that. I was voting for my dog Gilbert, whose slogan, which he coined himself, is "Good boy, Gibby."
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll buy
that. Yeah. But I'm voting horses for horses.
Is your son also running? And if so, what's his slogan?
Oh, no. It's only animals this time
around. No, you're right. Horses for horses is a very catchy slogan. It's got sort of an authoritarian ring to it. But, you know, that seems to be popular these days.
But it conveys strength.
It sure does.
Yeah.
That's right, because like, you know.
Strong for strong.
They'll kick, like, horses will kick you like a horse.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Have you ever been kicked by a horse?
I've never been kicked by a horse.
I'm glad.
I've had my foot stepped on by a horse. Wasn't as bad as I expected, but you better believe I very quickly set to work pushing them off my foot.
Yeah.
Okay, Matthew, here's another moment where we get to be regrettably underinformed Jews.
Oh, for sure.
What's this part?
Okay, so in the Passover Seder, you need bitter herbs as part of the Passover story, and horseradish usually serves as the bitter herbs maror.
Great, okay. Yeah.
Now, that, I think, brings us to wasabi. So you mentioned that you've mostly had horseradish in the form of wasabi.
That's right.
And you're right. So, like, much of what we are served as wasabi, like, in like an American sushi place, or like if you have some like in your fridge at home, like that you got in a cheap tube, there is a real plant called wasabi that's in the same family, but not the same species as horseradish. But mostly what you get is powdered horseradish mixed with mustard oil and water.
Ah, okay. So
and food coloring to make it green.
So in like your standard sushi restaurant, what you're getting is horseradish powder mixed with this stuff.
Yeah. So like if you get like a very smooth lump of something goes up your nose and makes you pant, that is going to be horseradish most of the time. Mm-hmm. I think we should do a whole wasabi episode. I think it would be interesting because like I knew there was such a thing as like real fresh wasabi, and it even like had it once or twice. It has to be freshly grated for it to really make a difference. Mm-hmm. Like you can spend more and get like real wasabi in a tube, but like it's not going to be any different, really.
What does it look like?
It's like a thin, knobbly rhizome. So like a twisty, knobbly root.
And when it's grated, so when it was served to you, what did that look like?
Like a pile of like green grated stuff.
Okay.
I think I mentioned this on the show. I had it in Shizuoka with a hambagu, so a little burger patty.
Uh-huh.
It was fantastic. Like I was like, okay, I get it. Like, this is really like a special food.
How would you compare like the aroma of it or the feeling of it in your sinuses? How would you compare that to the like the cheap tube wasabi?
I would say it's a little bit, the real stuff is a little bit milder and much more complex in flavor.
Interesting. Oh, I would love to try it.
And they grow wasabi like on the Oregon coast. Mm-hmm. And I think they carry it at Awajamaya. So I think we can get it and try it.
Mm. Okay. And so if you were to serve it to us, well, actually, no.
Yeah, we'll discuss this. I don't have a good answer for that yet. And we'll figure it out before the wasabi episode.
I almost said we'll save it for the Wikipedia episode. We'll
save it for the Wikipedia episode where finally, like, we
taste Wikipedia. I've wanted to for a long time.
All right. Anything else you want to add about horseradish?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I understand. I really like the idea of having something that has these qualities.
Yeah.
With something that's really rich, or with beef especially, I think it appeals to me. But there's something about it that, I don't know, even if I were at somebody's like fancy dinner situation, I don't know if I would like put a blob of it on my plate.
I think I would.
You would?
It's one of these things that I kind of don't want to do myself. Like, I mean, I would blob it myself, but I want someone else to be in charge of like, here's the thing you eat the horseradish with, and here's the horseradish I'm providing you.
And by providing you, do you want them to put it in your mouth for you?
Yeah, I want them to use like a syringe squirt it directly, or a turkey baster to squirt it directly into my mouth.
Yeah, you probably need like that size hole.
I need that size hole, yes.
not one of those like really tiny syringes.
No. Not like if you're getting like a vaccine, like I want like a larger quantity, I think.
Great. Okay.
But it's still like
you want it to fill your mouth.
I want it to fill my mouth. Like, what kind of party is this? All right. You know, we have a bunch of spilled mail that I forgot to put on the agenda. So let me pull one up and read it.
Okay. Okay. So this week's spilled mail comes from listener Courtney. I just enjoyed listening to your advent calendar episode. At the end, you expressed interest in learning more detail about the Nordic advent calendar programs. I'm happy to help. There's even an exclamation point here. She's so helpful. My father is from Norway, and though I've spent most of my life in the States, I spent part of my childhood living there, and I speak the language. To this day, my parents and I regularly watch programming online from NRK, the national TV network in Norway. And one of the highlights of their December programming is the daily advent program called, oh boy, get ready, Julekalenderen, Christmas calendar. I believe they have been producing the shows for several decades, though I only have vague memories of a season when I was a kid. I think it was pretty cheesy and low budget, featuring a family of mischievous little elves. In more recent years, the seasons I've seen have been really excellent. In each one, the protagonist is typically a child around age 10, give or take. The stories typically have a real-world element and a magical/fantasy world element. One thing I find really interesting about these shows is how they're different from much American entertainment produced for children. For example, the villains of the stories are typically not portrayed as evil, but rather fallible humans that give way to the common faults of jealousy, fear, selfishness, self-pity, misunderstandings, social awkwardness, emotional wounds, etc. They slowly dig themselves deeper into trouble, and at the culmination of the story, when everything unravels, they are given understanding and forgiveness rather than punishment. This is so un-American.
Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
I feel
nice.
Like when we inevitably become villains, it will definitely be by sliding down a path that begins with social awkwardness.
I think we've already done it. The protagonists overcome their obstacles through friendship, persistence, and hope. And though each series has a happy ending, the big problems of life don't magically disappear, like family members who've died, illness, and divorced parents. They do a really amazing job of balancing difficult realities that many children face with magic and fun and festivity. I'm moving to Norway right now.
Yeah, it sounds great.
One thing I really appreciate is that romance is never at the center of the stories, but rather friendship, no matter what the gender of the central characters. Yes, Norway! And the casting and writing are very inclusive, with characters of myriad ethnicities, family structures, and sexual identities. Can you tell I'm a fan?
This is so much better than I expected it to be.
This is amazing. Okay, just a little bit more. Yeah. Okay. I was thrilled to learn last year that they had created a sequel to my favorite season called Snowfall, and we'll post the link in the show notes. That series had the most delightful representation of Julnisse, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, the Norwegian version of Santa Claus.
Oh, so like a Yule elf.
Yes, there we go. As well as the most quirky and hilarious villains. Nearly all of the cast returned for the sequel, with the kids at the center of the first story returning as more peripheral teenage characters. There was a new group of kids at the heart of the new story. We'll link to that one, too. It did not disappoint. Sadly, the series is only in Norwegian. If I knew how, I would gladly create English subtitles for these two series so that all of my friends and family could enjoy it. It really is that wonderful.
Okay, well, I will say, like, translating subtitles is a lot of work. Actually, once you have the translation, like creating a subtitle file to go with a video file is not that hard.
Oh, Matthew, are you volunteering your services?
I mean, like, if listener Courtney were to, like, send me the translation, like,
what?
I would create the subtitle file.
Listener Courtney, are you hearing this?
I mean, I'm obviously like asking listener Courtney to do 95% of the work.
Do you think that this will be ready in time for Christmas?
I guess that's up to listener Courtney.
Oh, I can't wait to find out.
All right, we'll see.
Matthew, do you have a now but wow?
I sure do. I was just at my local branch of Seattle Public Library, our wonderful local library system, and they had a display of culinary mysteries, and I picked one up called Hot and Sour Suspects by Vivian Chen, and this is a delightful cozy mystery from Vivian Chen's Noodle Shop Mystery series, and it's set in like a Chinese-American family like that runs a restaurant in, can't remember exactly where it's set, but it's like in the Midwest.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying it so far. Other books of the series include Egg Drop Dead and Fatal Fried Rice.
Delicious. Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Molly has a newsletter that's called I've Got a Feeling, and you should subscribe right about now at mollyweisenberg.substack.com.
Matthew makes music. He has two bands as of this recording. They are called Twilight Diners and Early to the Airport. You can find them wherever you find music. So Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple Music, lots of other places.
Lots of other places.
Yeah.
You can hang out with other listeners of this show at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com, where you can talk about other words that start with horse.
Please. We want to know. Also, are you voting for Horses for Horses, or are you voting for Gilbert?
Wow, this is gonna be a tough year.
I mean, I just want to put it out there that Gilbert is not the most reliable dog. So,
but
maybe horses are a better
choice. If you've got a problem, he'll eat it.
That's true. That's true.
And that's his slogan.
And then he will look at you like what he's thinking is, "Good boy, Gibby."
There we go.
Yeah.
Until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. I'm the horse, Hamster Burton,
and I'm Molly Weisenhorse.
That's true, because then they can correct us.
There is nothing the human race loves more than correcting
mistakes.
Yeah.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
But not like big mistakes, little pointless mistakes. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, you spelled river with two V's.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
All right. So.